Good morning.
Jim, Mr. Russell, Yun, Johannes, Rebel.
Jim.
Good. We are getting started very soon. Just getting everyone up as speakers.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good afternoon.
Yeah, right. Good afternoon.
Yes. So used to saying GM, but
GM.
It's, yeah. Technically a bit too late. Okay, let's get going. Welcome to the Angels Wing Weekend Chat number 41. And this time we have a very exciting topic, talking with our good friend Daniel Tanner, aka Swombat. And we are going to go into a lot of details about NFTs as startup funding. But as usual, let's start with Casper introducing the Angels Wing for new listeners.
Hello, everyone. And of course, a very warm welcome to our returning guest, Daniel. Very happy to see you again. We are the Angels Wing, an international NFT art gallery and podcast show founded by friends around the world who met through our beloved Meta Angels project. Espresso, Johannes are from Europe. Yun's from the US, whereas Rebel and myself, we're from Asia. We're driven by a common passion to showcase independent artists and their art and help them stand out from the crowded NFT market that's pretty much dominated by generative 10K PFP projects. We showcase the art in an on-cyber virtual gallery, as a larger collection of art naturally brings a cross-pollination of viewership, and that has helped quite a few of our artists reach collectors through sales. We've organically grown since into a community of artists and collectors, but most importantly, friends, with regular Twitter spaces like these, which are then recorded into podcast formats in Spotify and YouTube. The easiest way to get in touch with us would be to join our cozy Discord. Everything's on our link in our bio, so hit us up if you're an indie artist who needs help featuring your art, or if you just want to join a friendly art NFT community. We'd like to mention that nothing on this show should be construed as investment advice. This podcast is for informational purposes only. And with that, I'll hand it right back to the host, the Espresso. Thank you.
Thank you, Casper. We wanted to hear more about the exciting stuff that Daniel is working on. And so it feels perfect to have you back for all the details and answering all the questions. And if anyone have questions, also feel free to tweet them or mention in the Discord. We'll be looking at the Discord as well in parallel. So, yeah, Daniel, why don't we start with explaining what's the new venture? What's the new startup that you're focused on?
Yeah, sure. Basically, it's called Pledger with a 3 instead of the second E. And the idea is to finally build that sort of Kickstarter on steroids NFT fundraising model that I've been talking about for over a year now. And I was kind of waiting for somebody else to build it, but it seems that people were busy with something else in 2022. And so eventually I decided the audience that I want to speak to is actually the people who are interested in startup fundraising via NFTs, but they don't have any startups to get interested in because there's not really the proper infrastructure to help those startups. And so I figured I can just wait for somebody else to do it, or I can roll up my sleeves and actually do this thing. And the more I've gone into it, the more I feel really happy and motivated by this particular venture. Now, a fantastic group of co-founders has assembled, including somebody with exactly the legal expertise that's needed to help us with this. And it feels very much like it's becoming something, or it is already something that basically, even if I had $10 million in the bank extra right now, this is still what I would be doing, because this seems like such a fun thing to do and so worthwhile and such a good application of my skills and my experience and with such a high potential impact in the world, because funding startups better is a very, very high leverage activity in terms of impact in the world. So that would be a kind of high level summary of why. And then in terms of the what's yet, so it's a Kickstarter on steroids, a kind of platform where you can go and if you've got a startup, you want to get funding for it, you can go and get the legal support you need, get the technology infrastructure that you need, hopefully get also some demand aggregation like on Kickstarter so that you can actually raise your funds via NFTs. That's the essence of it.
Nice. Thank you. And really catchy name, I have to say as well. Would you like to explain what do you see in this name? What does it represent for you?
Sure. We went through a few possible names, but we're waiting for the right name to come. And one of the things that I want in a name of a startup like this, like that I've come to find desirable, is particularly when it's a kind of mass market, it is mass market as a product, is something that can be the thing that you do as well, where the name of the startup is a thing that you do. Like Kickstarter is a brilliant example of that. It is the name of the company, and it's also you do a Kickstarter. Some names end up being shoehorned into that. Google was not an obvious one, but now people Google stuff all the time. I think it helps if the name lends itself naturally to that. One of the names that we had in mind was Little Whale Collective, and you can't do a Little Whale Collective. That doesn't make any sense. It was a kind of cool name in some sort of way, but it just didn't quite have the thing. And I really like that Pledger is a really simple name. It's short. It's easily pronounceable. Once you've seen it, you don't forget it. And it can be the thing that we do as well. It's got a certain elegance to it as well. And of course, it's available. There's nobody actually running a Pledger in the crypto space or elsewhere that we need to worry about. If you Google for Pledger, you'll find basically definitions in the dictionary. I remember there was some organization that's got nothing to do with funding or crypto. So it's ticked all the boxes.
Nice. Yeah, so that's one of the big challenges as well, finding something that's available and fits the purpose. I assume that like the proper thing to do with naming is to find the name, secure all of the domains on Twitter and stuff, and then announce it, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you find a name, you probably want to, like, before you go and tell people, buy all the things that you need to buy, which is basically just the .com domain and the Twitter account, effectively. We should probably get the .eth address. I don't think we have that one. Please don't buy it while listening to this. I'll go and buy it after this, or maybe during this, who knows. The name is not really the most important thing by a long shot. But when you think from a marketing perspective, having a good name that represents who you are quite well and that helps people get who you are, this just does make things easier. And like my previous business was called GrantTree, and that had the downside that it was, I've lost track. If I had a penny for every time I had to explain to people that it's GrantTree, like a tree of grants, so that they knew that there's two T's. I think I'd be a millionaire just from that. So it did have some downsides, but at least once they saw the tree of grants, it was like, oh yeah, grant tree, like that represents what we do. You come to us, you get some grants. And so that worked very well from that perspective. It was like a nice, fresh image. Also in a field where everybody else was sounding like an accountancy firm. So the name makes a difference, and it's not the most important thing. Like the most important thing is the product and whether you actually make a difference with the product that you build.
Yeah, that's true. I also wonder why now? Why do you think this is the right time to start working on the problem instead of preparing for solving it in the future?
What happened is I was reflecting on my YouTube channel over December, and I was realizing that like the production quality of my YouTube videos is good. I'm making, I think, relatively intelligent points and getting feedback that the videos are very valuable and unique, and yet they're not spreading. And so I realized that I need to change something about my videos, and because they're not really spreading. The numbers are going down, and yes, we're in a bear market, but still there's other people are getting tens or tens of thousands of views in similar topics. So I must be doing something wrong. And when I reflected, I realized I was mostly addressing the existing NFT market, which is primarily art collectors, which are totally fine, but I don't have that much to do with them. I mean, like a lot of you guys are into art and I have nothing against art, but it's not really my area of specialty. And then all the kind of traders and flippers and of course, the scammers and hustlers in the space. And I don't feel like a lot of resonance with those guys. And actually, a lot of my videos were telling those people that they're wrong to do what they're doing, which naturally people don't tend to want to share videos that tell them that they're wrong. That's not usually something that people like to share. So I reflected upon it and I thought the people I want to talk to is the people who are into startups. But there's not really that many of them right now because there's not really any startups getting funding, like getting funding via NFTs. There is a huge potential there, but it's not currently exploited. So the audience is not there because the thing is not happening yet. And so it was just through a kind of luck of circumstances that then I was like, okay, that's the audience I want to talk to. So I'm going to start doing stuff to help create that audience. And yes, it might take a year or 2 years or several years to go and create that audience, but that's the audience I want to communicate with. And then as I was looking at what I could do to help that happen, like the obvious thing is to actually help some startups get funding via NFTs. And I looked at the options for all the way from just making a basic informational site, pulling some resources together to help founders figure their way around this, all the way to creating a business like Pledger. And then the resources just appeared. Like the co-founders appeared. Everything seems to be just lining up for this thing to get started. A client appeared as well almost immediately. So I was like, okay, it feels like the universe is telling me that this can happen now. So might as well give it a try. So that's the decision in terms of timing there.
Yeah, that sounds great. And also, what kind of team are you building to make this happen? Like, what kind of skills are you planning that you'll need to build this infrastructure?
So it's four main things that we need. Three main things that we need, plus one that's a kind of a meta thing. If you look at the Pledger website, you'll see I've got the kind of three key drivers of what I think are the three key drivers of the product there, just a little bit if you scroll down. And one is the legal clarity. For that, we needed ideally an in-house lawyer who had the right experience and specialization and actually wants to work with us as a startup. And we found that. The technological aspect, we need somebody who can build the smart contracts and the sort of infrastructure that needs to exist there to make this process easy for startups to go through. And that person also appeared and was interested and available at that point. There's the audience side of things, the kind of the demand aggregation, I've called it, connecting with investors and like the traditionally called sales and marketing, but it's a bit different with a product like Pledger because there's also a kind of community building. That's what I'm going to bring, I think. And then the meta skill set that's needed also is the skill of building and scaling organizations, which I have done that, but I've learned from my experience at GrownTree, after some reflection on that, that whilst I can do it, I'm not really that good at it. And there are other people who are much better at it. And luckily, this fourth person is really good at this. So as the organization grows, he'll help it grow healthily.
Nice. So yeah, that sounds really amazing to have all of the resources lining up.
Yeah.
You mentioned legal and lawyer resources. So I imagine that's a really key piece of this puzzle because like in Web3, we always talk about securities law and avoid all of the projects try to avoid being securities. And yep. There's all kinds of hoops that people jump through to make that happen. Could you elaborate a bit on how you view the securities challenge and the kind of legal aspects of this?
Yeah, so this is funny because like I started much like everybody else in NFT space. And if you watch all my videos up until December, I'm basically saying you need to find a value link to the product that's going to link the product in the NFT in a way that's not a security. The value of the utility grows over time. Therefore, it makes a good investment whilst still not being like as obviously a security as it might otherwise be. And I say as obviously because when it comes to the US, like everything is a security according to their laws. And as we're seeing even over the last few days, there's a lot of difficulty, it appears, in dealing with the US as like the regulators there. Although I think it is possible to do better than what some people are approaching it, at least according to our lawyer, it is. Now, the revelation for me was to realize that I thought that it was the same everywhere else in the world. And so I thought everybody else has copied basically a sort of analogy of the Howey test and is applying it in a sort of similar way. Turns out that's not the case. And there are regulators, there are places where you can file, like sell securities. You can register securities relatively easily and start selling them to the public. And one of those is Germany, for example, which is not exactly a country that's cowboys who don't care about rules and so on. You can, there's a thing called a prospectus requirement, which applies across the EU for anything below €1 million. And then in Germany, actually, if it's below €8 million, you don't even need prospectus. You can just file a securities data sheet and issue some tokens that are basically securities and start selling them to people, so long as you share the securities data sheet with them. And then there's various other like ways to navigate this and engage with the regulators and engage with the regulation as it is that mean that it is effectively possible so long as you take away the US and Chinese markets, to issue NFTs that are securities that have basically shares attached, very simply, very plainly. So where when you buy the NFT, you actually get a percentage of the shares of the business, which, you know, is a very simple and straightforward way to tie the NFT to the success of the business. That's much more reliable at this point anyway than trying to come up with some elaborate form of utility that's going to go up in value as the business grows. The reason why I think a lot of people haven't seen that is because there's this kind of huge blind spot created by the US, where there's this perception that the US is everything and that it has to work in the US or else it doesn't work, which is weird for a global decentralized movement like Web3. You'd think that there'd be a bit less of US-centric blind spots, but it's like the mindset seems to be if we can't make it work in the US, then it's not worth doing. When actually, I think the rest of the world, minus the US and China, which you know are not acting very rationally, or don't appear to be at the moment, is quite a big market. There's quite a lot of people and quite a lot of businesses getting started and quite a lot of investors wanting to invest their money. In fact, even if you take crypto, like a lot of whales, a lot of people with lots of money in crypto are not US-based. Even those that were US-based, many of them have moved outside the US because they don't like the crypto laws in the US. So there's actually a lot of money that's out there that's not in the US and don't need to have the US market in order to make a viable business. It'd be nicer if you could, but then I guess if the US was more rational about its securities policy, then there'd already be five companies doing this, which would be totally fine by me because then I just spend my time looking at startups and investing in them instead of having to build this platform. But the result would be the same, that a platform exists that helps startups to get funding.
Nice, yeah. And Casper, got the questions?
Yep. So let's say if I were a startup wanting to get funding from this Pledger platform, what would I have to do? What kind of just some of the overarching steps that I need to take to get on board?
So bear in mind that this is really early days. We haven't got like a clearly defined process.
No,
it's fine. I can still answer, but I'm very much a build in the open type of person. I don't go and do something secretly for 6 months and then spring it upon the world. So I'm talking about this and I've been working on this for about a month and a half now. And we've got a client going through. So I've got some awareness of what steps we're going through with them, but there's going to be some evolution of this. What we have been doing with this client is we first selected a client that was the right type of client to work on this. And you want businesses that have some sort of community element because, you know, NFTs are superpower dynamite for community building. And if there's no community element, like if you were starting a business that's, I don't know, going to build an oil platform offshore or something, first of all, there's already funding systems for that. So there's enough funding for that kind of stuff. But also it would be difficult to connect to a community to get them to support that kind of project. Typically, at least I think so. Maybe there's communities of like oil platform fans out there. But you want to have as much as possible an existing community around that business so they can start being tapped as a source of funding. And then you want to design an NFT that's going to be appealing to users of the platform, of whatever is being built, so that they want to buy it as customers as well as investors. And this is where the shares thing has been really interesting, because by having such a clear value driver, it actually frees up the utility sites to be just utility. Like what is actually nice for users to have? What is a kind of good benefit that you can get with the NFT that will make users want it? And importantly, without undermining the commercials of the business. So for example, if you have a subscription-based business, I used to think that a lifetime access token was a good type of utility. But actually, if you think about it, that severely undermines the business model of the business. So if you've sold 10,000 lifetime access tokens and you've got now 10,000 people who aren't paying monthly subscription fees, getting those first 10,000 users is really hard. And doing that with no revenue, and they're getting no revenue for that and having to start at zero, basically at 10,001, is really making it hard for the business to be successful. So instead, for example, for this type of thing, we'd suggest more a premium plus NFT model where the NFT gives you extra bonus stuff on top of a premium subscription. So you need a premium subscription to use the NFT. So there's a kind of NFT design process. Obviously, we want art to be attached to that. And so far, the startup that we spoke to has an artist that works with them. So we're tapping into that artist to help create the NFTs. So they'll have some kind of cool art that's in their unique style as well. It's a pretty cool Turkish artist. everything's okay there with him. Actually, I haven't checked in about that. But yeah, so there's the design of the art. And then there's some amount of paperwork that needs to be done. And it turns out that actually quite a bit of the paperwork can be pushed back a little bit later. If you keep certain things vague, like the exact mapping of NFTs to shares, you don't even need to file that securities data sheet until the point where you make the link really clear, which is a nice little trick. And I'm sure there'll be other little tricks like that that we can use to try and optimize the process and make it smoother. But effectively, it's design the NFT, design the art, and then start, like, so create the NFT mint and start marketing it. That would be the overall process, I think.
Cool. Thanks for sharing. One last question. I think I have quite a few hands in the audience. So your business model of Pledger would be similar to real-life incubators, like taking a share of the NFTs at the start?
So I see it more as a Kickstarter equivalent than an incubator equivalent. So we would, like, I think the simplest model is to take a portion of the amounts raised. I think there probably would not be an upfront setup fee. Certainly there isn't for the first client, obviously. I don't think it makes sense to have an upfront fee. I think having a fee that's comparable to Kickstarter and other funding platforms makes sense because it is a comparable platform and it helps people raise funds. And those platforms charge a percentage of the amount raised. It makes sense that we would as well. That's what my thinking is at the moment. By the way, I want to say before we pass on to the people who have their hands raised, I imagine it's okay for listeners also to ask to speak if they have some questions. Just want to open that explicitly. So I welcome questions from anybody.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yep, my question's answered. Thanks, Daniel. I think Yoon had her hand first. Maybe, Yoon?
I think it was Johannes first.
Okay, oh, it's me.
Okay. Mr. Hexagon, PFP, please go ahead.
I'm fancy now. Yeah, but coming back to our topic, first of all, I'm really happy that you are not so US-centric. And I completely agree that, for example, here in Germany, we have very crypto-friendly laws. For example, that we can hold assets for 12 months and then it's basically tax-free. So it's awesome to be here. But I'm wondering, because you said you have a lawyer, will you concentrate on the British market, on also the European market, or will you get the global world? Because, as you said, it's different in every country, right? It's not China and US, but can you target the full world? What's the plan?
So my understanding is we can. That's what I understood from our lawyer, is we would not target the UK market because the FCA is a little bit harder on those kind of things. So we would not want those fundraisers to happen in the UK. However, based on what our lawyer said, and I'm just repeating there, but it seems that if you have a decent regulator covering what you're doing, and Germany is generally considered a decent regulator, getting regulated in Germany, there's EU passporting that means that the regulator, like whatever cover you get from the German regulator, then opens up the whole EU market. So that's already the whole EU that's included. And then when you look at other countries, there's most countries take what I would think is a fairly rational stance on this. And the UK is also one of those that's fairly rational. Namely, if you're not actively marketing to their people, so in the case of UK, if you're not like putting adverts on the tube, trying to sell your tokens to people and holding like public events and stuff and trying to raise funds in the UK, if you just have a website out there and there's already a regulator covering this, unless it's like an obvious scam and they really don't like you and it's growing really big, they've probably got better things to do, like for something that's already regulated. The US and China are different. China has, I don't even know what their policy is. It seems to be like just be very hostile to everything crypto. And the US seems to be having a similar policy, actually, now that I think of it. And except they already have a lot of crypto inside. I don't know, then again, so did China. But anyway, the US and China are slightly different in that if you sell to even a single US person, the SEC might try to come after you. So until we figure out the US market strategy, which our lawyer has some ideas about, we will stay away from the US market. And that does mean that US citizens cannot, or US persons cannot invest in those, cannot buy those NFTs from us anyway. They, like professional investors, if they really want to participate in this, they can, like a lot of them have offshore entities anyway, and they can use those if they want to, but they can't do so as US persons. And I guess individual investors, private, like retail investors, so to speak, won't be able to participate in this thanks to the SEC, which is protecting investors from innovation in investments. But for the rest of the world, it should be okay, just that we publish the site, like we don't market specifically to their country, and we are regulated by a regulator. That's my understanding at this point.
Well, that's awesome. I think it's a great idea that finally somebody is saying, okay, it's a security. Yes, buy it. And maybe
you know,
can
my position
even...
has been that they're all securities for quite a while.
Yeah, but everybody's saying it's not a security, it's art. So it's great that finally somebody says, yeah, you can buy a security here and maybe it grows in value and then it might be a good investment. And yeah, maybe you can even sell it to the US. You chose never visit America after that, but maybe it works.
Actually, if you think about it, it is possible to sell securities that aren't public to the US market. Republic.com does that. Their crowdfunding website, like Kickstarter for shares or Crowdcube in the UK, does something equivalent. And Republic does sell shares to the public, and yet they are not being shut down by the US regulators. So it is possible to sell shares to the US public. There are regulations that cover that. How to navigate that is that's a matter left to a lawyer. I don't know exactly how to do that. But it is possible. You just have to contort in the right way, I guess.
Thank you very much for answering this. And now I would like to hand over with my fancy hexagon PFP to Jew, who has just a circle.
Thank you. So
just before you ask, I just saw there's a question about what about Canada? And the answer is, I don't know. I think they're not in the US, as far as I know. And so therefore, they're not covered by the SEC. But I don't know. This is for our lawyer to decide that. But I don't think the SEC works in Canada. No. Anyway, that's my understanding there. Back to you, Yun. Thank you.
Yeah, I have also related to security regulations. And I understand that depending on the market you want to promote your company idea to, it differs a lot. But I was wondering whether it would actually make sense to build NFTs actually on Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is considered to be a commodity. And I may be wrong, but like to my understanding, there's still debates going on whether it's to be a commodity or just digital security. So just in terms of future thinking, I was just wondering whether Bitcoin NFTs may just more secure, particularly in this field that you are trying to build.
I mean, my perspective on that is that whilst Ordinals is a really cool technology that's being developed there, to me, it doesn't really matter where the NFTs are hosted and whether they're on Ethereum, on Polygon, it needs to be a reliable place. And I guess there are slightly more questions about Ethereum's long-term reliability than Bitcoin's, but I think they're pretty close in terms of their reliability. And by the way, Bitcoin has had basically Bitcoin-backed NFTs through something called Stacks for quite a while. Like, in fact, one of the co-founders of Pledger, Mark McKenzie, is a founder of Megapont, which is an NFT project on Stacks, which runs on Bitcoin. So Ordinals is the talk of town right now, but Bitcoin has actually had NFTs for quite a while. It's just a new way to do NFTs on Bitcoin. To me, the question is more, can you do clever stuff with smart contracts to have all these things be as trustless as possible? And I don't think you can do that with Coin, or not very easily at the moment, whilst with Ethereum, that's comparatively a lot easier. For example, we want to have a Kickstarter-style process where we don't end up with this really bad situation that happens very often with NFT project mints, where they open the mint and then a few hundred items sell and then it just dies and then it doesn't mint out. And that's a really shitty situation for everybody, because the people who invested, like, I have some expectation, but they're buying something that is basically dead in the water. So they've wasted their money. And the people who started the business are also screwed, because they've now got a bunch of investors that want them to do something, but they don't actually have enough money to do anything. And Kickstarter solves that very elegantly by having milestones where, until you reach the first milestone, which is enough to actually do the project, you don't get any funding. And if you don't manage to reach the funding, the milestone in the time that's allotted, which is like a month or 6 weeks or something like that, then everybody gets refunded. That's something that can be coded on Ethereum as a smart contract, so that everybody can know that, yes, the milestones are all coded into the smart contract. And if it reaches the milestone, then the NFTs are distributed. And if not, then everybody gets their money back and nobody lost anything. Also, we don't want to be pricing this in Bitcoin or in Ethereum, which makes it much more inaccessible to normal people, which is the people that we want to actually attract to use this platform. We want to be doing this probably in USDC or any other stablecoin. And therefore, I think that makes Bitcoin further and less suitable than Ethereum, which I don't think Bitcoin supports USDC or some kind of equivalent of USDC natively, whilst Ethereum does. So all that would point towards more Ethereum, or at least the Ethereum ecosystem, whether that ends up being level one Ethereum or Polygon or Optimism or like one of the others. That's a decision that I'm leaving to Mark, who knows these things a lot better than me. And so long as it's reliable, I don't really care. And plus, ultimately, if the chain that we pick doesn't make it, the NFTs can be transferred to another chain, because we're not talking about the historical value of, oh, like this is this specific NFT that all its value is on chain. The value of these NFTs is going to be mostly off chain. Like the shares attachment is going to be via legal, like a contract that's being that will be drafted that says each NFT maps to this many shares. That can be adjusted to point to a different NFT if that needs to happen. So there is, because there is that off-chain component as well, it doesn't really matter that much, I think, which chain those things are stored on.
Yeah, I think it's great that you are saying this, that it's really coupled to shares, because then I would like to mention that you should somehow rephrase your punchline. Kickstarter is maybe a bad example, because I know that a lot of project on Kickstarter just grabs the funding and run away.
A lot less than on NFTs.
Yeah, I invested. Pretty often the founders say, oh, it's not working, and then they run away with the money.
I've been lucky, I guess. That's not happened to any of the Kickstarters that I bought into. But what did bother me about Kickstarter was that once I bought into it, I couldn't do anything with the pledge that I'd made there. I couldn't do anything with the pledge that I made. And for example, at one point, I bought a huge set of miniatures because I was into miniature painting. And I was like, okay, I need more miniatures to paint. And this project that's doing these D&D miniatures, and they're going to send me like 150 different miniatures that I can paint. And it took a year and a half to deliver. And in the meantime, so many things happened. I bought a 3D printer, I printed my own miniatures, and then eventually my rate of painting dropped down so much that I no longer have a problem of not having enough miniatures. Meanwhile, like 6 months later, the massive pile of miniatures arrived, like three massive boxes in my house. And luckily, I had a friend who's running D&D games on an actual tabletop. So I was able to just give those to him. But if it had been a token, I could maybe have traded that to somebody else who might actually want it, rather than me just ending up with these boxes of stuff that I don't actually have any use for. And that actually happened with two projects that I backed. They delivered, just I didn't want the thing anymore by the time they delivered, because it took so long.
It's great that you can exchange them with other people who are still interested.
Mm. But this also raised another question, because you mentioned excluding the US for various reasons. And how do you think about resale of these NFTs? Is that something that's going to be supported at all? Or
yeah, my understanding of this, and obviously the understanding can evolve over time, but my understanding of this is that the issue we would have is if we are selling to US persons. As long as we're not selling to US persons, if other people decide to go and sell to US persons, that is their liability rather than ours. Specifically, if a marketplace decides to sell our NFTs to open it for US persons to buy, we can't stop them from doing that. We have no way of stopping that. NFTs inherently don't support that kind of, that would have to really break the NFT standard really badly in order to prevent transfers to non-KYC wallets or something like that. And I don't think that's a sensible step that anyone should take. If OpenSea lists the projects and people from the US buy it on the secondary market, that's not us selling to the US market. And OpenSea, I don't know what they'll do. I think at some point there was a project that declared itself a security, and then OpenSea blocked them, and then they changed their mind, and then OpenSea unblocked them. I don't know, I expect OpenSea will probably block us. It would be probably the smart thing for them to do, because they are a US company. As far as I understand it, LuxRare and Blur are not incorporated in the US and have basically anonymous founders who are fairly difficult to pin down. And I suspect they will continue listing those projects. But we'll see. At some point, we would probably want to create our own marketplace, simply like at the very least as a kind of curated marketplace where you can just easily find the information, also formatted in a way that makes it useful. Because OpenSea and a lot of these other trading platforms are more focused on trading. Basically, what we're selling there is securities that are tied to businesses. When you click on a project, rather than just a piece of text that like scrunched up at the top and an image, what you should be seeing is some kind of metrics about the business, like a link to their business plan or their latest updates and stuff like that helps you evaluate whether you want to buy into that business at this point or not. So eventually some kind of marketplace of our own is coming, I think.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned that, like Kickstarter, you want to focus on people like crowdfunding. So that means that you're not going after the kind of angel investing style?
No, I suspect that the angel investors will and definitely should get interested in this. Certainly I, as an angel investor, I'm interested in this because angel investing is such a broken model as well. Even if you are lucky enough to make an investment in like a great startup that is going to go to the moon and do really well, like the next unicorn, basically, there's so many ways for you to get screwed on the way because there's no liquidity. It's impossible to sell out. For example, my experience has been I bought into this startup where I made only two angel investments myself of about £10,000 each. And I stopped because it felt like this is not this. One of the investments I made was, it was a really cool company that was building a toy that was there to help pre-verbal children to learn how to program. That a kind of board where you could put these kind of pieces with like arrows going left, right, turn around and stuff like that. And then there was a kind of loop construct as well, repeat the last instructions. And you could push a button and then this little robot would move along the instructions that you put within this kind of visual language. So kind of way to teach children how to program before they even know how to read. And I thought that was really cool. They seemed like really good founders. I gave them £10,000. They built a business that was relatively successful. They designed the product, they built it, they delivered it to clients. They're like people were buying that thing and they had distributor deals. And then at some point, something went wrong with the cash flow management and they had to sell to the distributor for basically nothing. So all the shareholders got wiped out. And I appreciate that's the current model as it is. But from an investor point of view, this really sucks because I feel like I made the right bet. It was a good business. They built it. Like they went from zero to a functioning business. And then something went wrong 5 years later, and therefore I got no return. With NFTs, because they have much greater liquidity, I think there's more chances to get out a bit earlier, which negates that problem. And then another problem that happens also for startups, even those that do get to an amazing exit as a unicorn and stuff like that, is that early investors often get screwed by liquidation preferences. Later investors who bring in a lot more money come in with better terms. And because they bring in so much money, they can get their way typically. And that can mean that the early seed investors who took the most risk end up getting a proportionally tiny return because they get just diluted to nothing by other people's liquidation preferences. And that's another way that this is broken and which is fixed, I think, by liquidity, because then you can choose to sell earlier, to take some profits earlier, which you can't with shares at the moment. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That reminds me, I had a period where I was investing in the stock market to get some better savings returns and really experienced kind of similar things where if you invest in individual stocks, you have to pay very close attention to all of the updates, all of the plans for stock splits and additional funding rounds and whatnot. Because if not, then suddenly you miss out and lose the chance to protect your investment, basically. So that's after that kind of short stint doing that, I kind of realized, okay, this is why funds are a good idea. If you want to be in the stock market, buy the index fund, because they take care of all of that, right?
Yeah, the stock market is even worse because there you're playing against traders who have loads of tools and loads of capital to bear that can basically move the market in all sorts of ways. So it's trading against professional traders, I think, is a very bad act. But even long-term investment, by the point you've got the company has gone public, because it is delayed so long by the current IPO process, most of the returns have already been squeezed out to the early investors. So NFT as a startup funding opens up that part of the journey to everybody to invest in, which I think is really good.
Yeah. And that also means that people investing with this approach, they need to have a different mindset than what we currently see in the NFT market. It's not reasonable to expect returns in 6 months or days or weeks.
Yeah, we're actually thinking about that. I'm not sure yet whether we might want to do that or not, but there's one thing that we could do is because these are long-term investments and they're not supposed to be like just traded like crazy, like immediately, there could be a lockup period as well for those NFTs. We'll have to see. I think the first one, I don't think we'll have that for the first one, and we'll see what happens. But what I definitely don't want is to set up the founders with a really massive headache of having to manage a bunch of crazy investors who are like wanting returns right away and stuff. And we've seen like how NFT projects get distracted out of, even the ones that are well-intentioned get distracted out of what they're trying to build by managing all those investors. And so if there's ways that we can balance that while still seeing as much as possible the liquidity, I don't know, we'll try and figure something out there. One fairly ham-fisted, I think, option is basically to lock up trading for a year or something after the mint. And that way, you only buy it if you're going to stick with it for a year. And that's something we might consider at some point. Not for the first one, but we'll see. If the first one ends up with a massive headache on managing all those investors, then we might well try that on the second one. There's a bit of trial and error going on there.
Yeah, that makes sense. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And what are your plans on how to reach the target audience, like the people who are interested in investing in good startups?
There's multiple lines of approach. One is that, of course, I already have some kind of platform towards the NFT space. But in a way, most of that is not the ideal people that I want to invest in those projects, unless they are into investment as a, into long-term investment, which a lot of the NFT space is not. I'm hoping that over time we build a lot of visibility with individuals who are interested in that, who are not in the NFT space at the moment. And I think that the way that will happen is that each startup will also bring its own community and they will register on our platform to be able to make an investment. And we'll have to KYC them and then they can make other investments if they want. And I'm hoping there's a kind of accrual that happens in that process. We also probably will be launching our own NFT at some point, and not probably, we'll definitely be dog fooding this and like using our own products to fund ourselves. And that might create also a community of interested investors that helps bootstrap the demand aggregation side of things. So there's a few ideas around that. I don't have anything certain that's one of the challenges of building this business.
Yeah, but that sounds reasonable. And also makes sense that there's a potential to build a kind of wider community, keeping up with new startups launching on the platform and investing in potentially multiple, because that's a problem with Kickstarter, right? The way I see it, at least, is that it's so focused on the product, like you're buying a product. So if you're not interested in that product, you're looking away, right? It's this platform with funding sounds more generic like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think with Kickstarter, you're right. I think what one of the big differences is with Kickstarter, there's no barrier to making investments, that is into buying, because you're not making an investment. You're just buying a board game or something. So they don't do any KYC or any of that stuff. So they might create an account, but it's not a very difficult process to create an account. And with something like Pledgr, there will be a need to KYC, which is a bit of a pain in the ass process. So it creates a sort of more stickiness, hopefully. But then that will only happen if the startups that go through Pledgr are good, obviously. So if we bring things that are of interest to people.
Yeah. And are you planning to build this into a kind of self-service platform at some point for new startups?
Yeah. So like, one of the things that we're all pretty aligned on is we want to build this into a self-sustaining business, first of all. But we're all quite keen on concepts like self-management and decentralization. And so at the point where it makes sense, we'd want to, as much as possible, try and turn this into a decentralized service where there isn't any more like a central controlling party. I don't know exactly what that would look like. I know that for myself, I don't believe in trying to be decentralized from day one. I think that's a cop-out. I think on day one, you need leadership and to be have some clarity about where you're trying to go. And that's a centralized activity. But once the shape is functioning, at some point, it will be interesting to start looking at how to decentralize it and open it up as much as possible. Like, for example, one of the things that I'd really like to do that I imagine doing is that effectively, we're providing a platform to list those projects that fit certain criteria. Like that would be ultimately what we will be. That would be our main moat. But because everybody can copy the processes eventually, you know, how to do the legal paperwork and the technical infrastructure is not going to be rocket science to copy. But there will be a kind of moat of the demand that's aggregated around our site. But maybe what we can do is that we effectively structure it as a sort of review system where the businesses that we help end up getting a review from us, And we can maybe build that in a decentralized way on a blockchain so that other people can also post reviews. And then each individual investor can select which reviewers they want to filter by. So they might be, I want the original Pledger team to be the reviewers that I want to select by. Or they might say, actually, I want, I don't know, Jim Cramer's list, because that's what I want to invest in for some odd reason. Like, why not? Maybe we can make that possible. Progressive decentralization.
Yeah, so like at some point end up with kind of a curated set of projects and then a self-service section.
Yeah, basically.
Nice. And in terms of infrastructure, you've used this term like building the funding infrastructure. Like technically, what's the pieces you need to put in place?
First of all, we're going to need that smart contract to be coded and audited. We need also a website that can allow people to register and do the KYC and then mint. And we need that website to be displaying, like a Kickstarter needs to be displaying the milestones, the progress, all these kind of things. For the initial version, that's all we really need. Eventually, there will be more stuff needed, but I like to do these things in a very sort of on a needs basis type of approach. If there isn't a clear need for it, don't build it. And I don't even necessarily want to waste time imagining it in too much detail until it's actually needed, because it's very possible that it's not, and then that would be a waste of time.
Yeah, that sounds like a very good approach. And one question also on the side of this. These NFTs are primarily representing shares, but it will be open for the startups using the platform to put additional utility or functionality behind the NFTs, like using them for token gated.
Not just open, we absolutely encourage that. I think that we're missing out not to do that. There should be community elements. There should be art as well, because people engage with art much better. There should be collectability as well, because it makes things fun. And as much as I rail against all the Ponzi's and stuff abusing this, collecting things is fun. And that's a good feature. It's good that investing can be made more fun. I don't see that as a bad thing. I think that's one of the ways I look at this, is that one of the ways that this model is superior, and why I call it Shares 2.0, is because with the previous game, what you have is effectively you have a game where investors buy in at a really cheap price. And then the company gets built, and at some point it goes public, and early investors will basically dump on retail. And that is considered acceptable because they hopefully don't dump in such a way that everybody gets completely wrecked. And also the result of this process, even if some people lose money, is we have these amazing companies that are changing the world. So it's a worthwhile pain point to have. This went wrong on a couple of occasions. One was the dot-com boom, for example. There, people were just pumping up companies that were not building anything, and they were just making money from the IPO, and then the company wasn't even building anything afterwards. And basically, everyone was getting rich except for retail investors who were getting wrecked in the process. And obviously, that was not a good model, and I'm glad that they shut that down, because that was definitely not a good model for society. It was resulting in empty companies, basically as bad as many NFT projects that weren't doing anything, just had some kind of pitch that was a bit silly, and a bunch of people losing a bunch of money whilst VCs got insanely rich. It's happened again in the ICO bubble, where people were busy and people did exactly the same thing and got shut down again for the same reasons. With NFTs, that's one of the problems that I think is there with that model, is that the only value of shares is the economic value. It's either it's a price or it's a price and a yield, but it's basically just the economic value. There's no emotional attachment to shares. There's no other utility to shares. They're just a number. And when all you have is just a number, like there's a kind of inherent Ponzi nature to it, that you're always selling to somebody who's also hoping that the number will go even further up. And at some point, somebody has to lose, basically. Hopefully, they buy into a blue chip, so they don't lose too much when they lose, but still somebody has to lose somewhere in that chain, because things can't grow forever. With NFTs, because you tie other kinds of value driver into the NFT, I think that opens up a really interesting alternative where investors might still buy in and they might not care about the emotional elements and so on, or the utility. They're just buying because they hope the price will go up. So they might buy early, but then as the product takes off, as the whatever is being built becomes more and more interesting, if the utility is well conceived, people might want to buy these because they want the utility, because they want to use the thing. And now investors can dump, in quotes, to people who actually want to buy because they want to use it. So they're dumping, so not really dumping, they're basically selling to customers something that customers want to buy, which also happens to have an investment nature to it. But I can see a scenario where somebody buys a token for a project and they're like, I know that the price might go up or down, and I expect that I will be probably able to sell it for some portion of what I paid. But most importantly, I just want to use this thing right now. So that's why I'm buying it. And I don't really care what happens to the price that much, because I just want to use the thing. And that's a much healthier handover, I think, than what usually happens with VCs and public markets. And that's only possible with NFTs that bundle all these things together with the shares. So it's very important for these parts to be in place.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you already have parts of this infrastructure ready, with people have wallets and are used to signing in on websites using their NFTs.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And also, we do like to bring up all of the ways the NFT projects are failing, but there are some really good examples of very strong communities have been built in the process. And like, even projects where the core project is quote failing, still the community persists and it is a strong one. So that's a strong signal that there's something here. That the ICO bubble definitely did not have that. I was here for that, and that was wild, and there was no community aspect as far as I could see.
Yeah.
A follow-up question to that, does this mean that the platform is best suited for kind of digital native startups that have some way of utilizing NFTs?
Actually, no, I don't think so. I think one of the really interesting things about this platform is it can actually help fund a much broader range of businesses than what the current funding landscape can handle. If you look at the current funding infrastructure, it's very well designed to fund the next unicorn. But if you're not building the next unicorn, it's not really ideal. Investors won't really want to invest in you because they make all their returns on those few businesses that do really well. You won't get that much support. With this, because there's all these kind of non-financial angles that come in as well, I think there's potential to fund a much broader variety of businesses. And also because the liquidity is greater, there's ways to make those investments profitable without them becoming massive unicorns and stuff. So I actually think that any kind of community-based business would be very well suited to this type of funding model. A restaurant, for example, which is not a business that normally manages to raise money very easily, would be greatly suited for this. Because if you think about it, restaurants are local businesses. They usually have lots of contacts with the local community. Somebody who wants to start a restaurant and be successful will probably want to already have good links to the local community. They may have lots of goodwill from that local community. And they, with a fundraising model like Pledger, they might be able to get their, like, the community to basically fund the restaurant and be co-investors and co-owners of the restaurants all together and get special benefits in the restaurants, which actually would lead to the restaurant being much more likely to be successful as well. Because if the whole local community is bought into your restaurant, they're going to go there, they're going to bring their friends there, it's going to be your free marketing that helps make or break the restaurants, especially early on. So I think there could be a lot more different kinds of businesses that can get funding this way that currently aren't being funded. And that also gets me really excited, because all those businesses are also doing something good. It's not just the startups and unicorns and the, like, the digital this and that. There's all these real businesses around us. They make a difference. They make worlds worth living in, and they need funding as well, but they're not well served by the current infrastructure.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And also, if you think about a restaurant, like, one of the core problems is that they compete with the people or the restaurants nearby. And if a hugely successful chain opens across the street, they have a big problem. So this community aspect sounds like it can really bring some of that stickiness that they need.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and taking this even further, I'm wondering, but this is not really in the scope of Pledger, but it could be at some point, but it's definitely not in the initial scope. I'm wondering also what other kinds of fundraising could be powered by this kind of model. Because even if there isn't a business, a for-profit business being built, and so if you let go of the shares angle of things, and there we enter more into the NFT space as we know it, except maybe with people actually trying to do something good with the funds that they raise instead of just trying to hype up the NFTs. There could be some sort of way that somebody, again, who has a lot of good social connections can use this as a fundraising model, where right now, if you donate to a good cause in your community, you don't really get anything other than the good feeling that you donated and maybe some kind of result. Maybe they actually make a difference sometime later. With NFTs, you still get those effects, but you also get an NFT, which allows somehow the value to circulate a bit better. Some of the goodwill that has been generated by the person who's doing the fundraising maybe is circulated over to you, which might mean something, might help collect a community around that person better and creates more value exchanges. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but one of the ways that I'm looking at the moment is that back in the 1600s, the stock market was invented. I think shares existed in some form for a couple of hundred years, but really they took off with the Dutch East Indies Company. And the really powerful invention was a way to circulate value effectively, to take the financial assets of loads and loads of individuals and pool them together and use them productively, unfortunately, in a very evil way, which was to go out and go and kill a bunch of people and steal their stuff, which is not great. But the model is pool resources together, go and do some kind of common enterprise and return the profits of that enterprise to people. So it's a value circulation model. And that's been the main value circulation model that's existed since then. Even charities don't have a value circulation model. They just receive donations, but there's no circulation of the value. What shares do really well is circulate that value, get it to keep going around. And I'm hopeful that NFTs can evolve into something that can help circulate value in more interesting new ways. But we'll see. It's going to take a little while.
Yeah, that's really great. And I know we're going a bit over time. I only have one last question.
Sure.
Do you have any kind of minimum and maximum amounts in mind for startups that can use the new platform and for retail investors that want to buy?
So any what in mind?
Any amounts, like minimum amount and maximum amount.
So what we're thinking for this first project, and I'm welcome feedback about this, but we want to make it affordable so that people can buy into this without being crypto rich people and nevertheless raise a substantial enough amount of money for the business to actually be able to do something. And what we're looking at is seed fundraising. So it actually makes quite a lot of sense to have a price per NFT of about $100, I think. It's a nice round number. If you can't afford $100, you probably shouldn't be investing in highly speculative assets anyway. And if you can, it's not an extraordinarily large amount. So you can, if you really care about a business and you live in a reasonably wealthy country, you should be able to get to put together $100 to invest in something that you really care about. And actually, the numbers work out really well, because if you sell 5,000 tokens at $100 each, you've got $500,000, which is round about what a seed round often is. So that works quite well at that value.
Nice. Okay, thank you. And unless there are any other final questions, thank you so much, Daniel, for coming on and talking to us about this exciting
new venture. Thank you for inviting me again.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And we will also make sure to edit the episode and put it out in podcast form and on YouTube. We've had a bit of a backlog lately in doing so, but we will expedite this to make sure we get the episode out.
Well, things will evolve rapidly with Pledger. They might be slightly out of date by the time the podcast comes out then. But I'm hoping that we launch our first project in March. We'll see. But if you're interested in finding out more, pledger.com website, so with the 3 instead of the second E, is the place to go. And there's a mailing list, sign up there. And of course, we're not going to launch anything without telling the mailing list. So you can be sure not to miss out by putting your email in there.
Nice. That sounds good. And we've also pinned the Twitter account to the space. So that's also a good thing to follow. So yeah, that sounds great. Thank you so much again, and have a nice Sunday evening.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Time. Retail. Retail.